Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Hello, and welcome back to Small Town Murder.
Express.
Yay! Yay indeed, Jimmy. Yay indeed. Yeah. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wissman.
There we go. And all aboard the murder train. Yeah. It is pulling away from the station.
Motherfucking chew.
Let's do this. We have a crazy episode, so we'll get through all the top of the show and the town stuff very, very quickly, because it's just so ridiculous and crazy. So very quickly, anything extra you want, shutupandgivememurder.com. We'll get you tickets. We'll get you tickets to live shows. Going to get you merchandise, everything. We got coloring books up, all sorts of cool stuff. Patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get the bonus material. Mm-hmm. And we have so much good stuff on there. Anybody $5 or above, you're going to get access to everything we put out bonus wise, crime and sports, Small Town Murder, you name it, you're going to get it. And this week, we're over 150 episodes in the back catalog. And this week, you're going to get for crime and sports, story about Doc Ellis, who was a Major League Baseball pitcher who threw a no hitter while tripping on acid really hard. So that's a great story there. And also, you know, some other stuff. He was a funny, outspoken dude and a funny guy. And then for Small Town Murder, we are going to talk about, we'll kind of branch off the documentary Conversations with a Killer, the John Wayne Gacy tapes.
Everyone's been wanting
us to talk about that. We're going to mix that in with some stuff from, I read a couple books about him, especially his lawyer's book that has a lot of insights into him. And
that poor bastard.
That guy just, it was like his first client. And he's like, I got a client. And he's like, how many bodies are there? He's like, let me tell you a story. Holy shit. So that's a crazy story. Patreon. Patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get all of that good stuff.
A more sympathetic character there's never been.
Never, ever been there. Absolutely not. that lawyer, yeah. He starts out in the beginning of the book, too, like, this is why I would defend somebody. Like he needs to defend himself for working. It's funny. So we'll get into all of that, though, on the Patreon episode, like we said there. And you should also listen to Crime and Sports every Tuesday. Listen to regular Small Town Murder episodes every Thursday.
Let's do this.
Let's sit back, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Clear the lungs, shall we? And shout from everybody, wherever you are, by the way, your treadmill in your car, maybe your office, anywhere but the airport, really.
Yeah.
Shout, shut up.
Shut up and give me murder.
There we go. Let's do this, Jimmy.
All right.
Let's go on a trip, shall we?
Fantastic.
All right. We are going. Don't get so excited quite yet.
Listen, man, anywhere but here. This has been the worst fucking day of my life.
I know.
I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I just want to have fun.
Well, we're going to have fun. We're going all the way to Fenton, Missouri, Jimmy. That sounds fun. Fenton. Mm-hmm. Fenton, Missouri. F-E-N-T-O-N, Missouri.
Swinging a miss.
Oof. It's a suburb of St. Louis nowadays. Okay. It used to be very rural, though, up till 20 years ago, basically. Okay. The population just spiked in around 2000. People fleeing St. Louis, they live out here. Mm-hmm. It's like a half hour outside St. Louis, so what do you expect? Yeah. It's commutable. By the way, the people of Fenton are either Fentonians or Fentonling. Fentonling?
Yeah.
That's the worst name of human being for a human group of humans I've ever heard. The Fentonlings.
Better off with fentanyls.
Fentanyl sounds much better. I'm happier with that than Fentonling. Yeah. Population right now is about 4,027. Okay. It's pretty affluent right now. It's almost $90,000 is the median income here, household income. So a lot of people make over $100,000. Yeah. And the housing costs here are still a little under the national average. So it's kind of a bargain. Very quickly, to give you an idea of what this town is, basically what the... If you're from another country or something, you want to know what the Midwest of the country is like and a lot of our country, this will explain a lot. The earliest proof of ancient people being here, ancient dwellers, was excavated from the Fenton Mounds, which are two conical earthen burial mounds located near the southwestern border of Fenton. Diagnostic pottery shards from the mounds indicate they date back all the way to 1050 to 1400 AD. So,
wow.
So, 1,000-year-old, very, very historic site there.
Unbelievable.
So, in 2001, the mounds were leveled and they built a Walmart supercenter on them. Oh, say, can you see? By the dawn's early light. That's everyone, America, in a nutshell, right there.
Fuck this old shit.
Oh, there's some history. Oh, these people, this is from 1,000 years ago. Well, this will be the automotive and tire section over. Yeah, where we found the bones of them people. But we're going to put that right there. Outdoor shit next to that. Right in the back. Yeah, about the back corner. What the?
We will drain the 10W30 over their desecrated remains.
If you've ever seen Missouri, look at a map of Missouri. There's really there's Kansas City and St. Louis, and they are both on the outside borders trying to flee the state of Missouri as fast as possible. In the middle.
It's because of this.
Well, we drove from Kansas City to St. Louis. We saw what's there. There's plenty of room for Walmart supercenters that aren't on historical burial grounds all the way through that state. They don't give a shit, though. I thought that was amazing.
Walmart Supercenter.
I thought that was just the perfect the perfect touch to this.
Really pissing on the ashes, man.
Wow. Holy shit. I read that. I'm like, that can't be real. I looked at it. I'm like, that's real.
Sure.
Wow. Wow. So
pave these mounds.
Pave them over. This is a perfect place for a big old parking lot.
Pave these mounds. Put up a Walmart parking lot.
Oh, man. So quickly, a couple reviews.
Holy fuck.
They're very opposite, though. Mm-hmm. Reviews. Here's 5 stars. I've lived in Fenton for 55 years and would never consider living anywhere else. Fenton offers excellent Rockwood and Lindbergh schools and has plenty of nice stores and businesses for your shopping needs. Fenton has several parks and an excellent recreation center to exercise, play sports, or just relax on a Sunday afternoon. Fenton is a wonderful and very safe community to raise a family. Perfect. Here's 2 stars. It's nice to be close to the good schools and shopping. For what it costs to live, but for what it costs to live here, the and property tax and sewage treatment center really needs an upgrade. The sewage treatment needs an upgrade. That sounds like a problem. Fenton used to be much
you
more.
Notice that.
Yeah, Fenton used to be much more rural with horse farms and peace and quiet. But due to overpopulation and gentrification, sadly, that's a thing of the past. Poor, starving, sickly deer roam here with nowhere left to go. The drivers are aggressive, crime is on an uprise, and recent floods have caused a lot of erosion damage. Gee, it's just falling apart. So this is basically what's going on here. Is it used to be a very rural place with a lot of just it was a very rural. There's some trailer parks and shit like that, and then there's like horse farms and stuff, and then it's now turned into a suburb. Okay. That's the thing. So, and that's where we're going to pick it up is in 1993 is when it was still pretty rural out here. You know what I mean?
Right around the flood, right? Wasn't there a giant flood around that?
Yeah, right around there. Yeah, right there. On the Mississippi River. Yeah, absolutely. So quickly, I looked for things to do, and I found Fenton Days. And the description, they have this big description. They have all these bands and like all this stuff. What is this? Lucy's Palace and Borderline are going to be there. And they have the Jolly Jumps inflatable thing. Yeah. Aunt Amy, the balloon twister, will be there.
All right.
Very exciting. Then it just says on the page, though, at the top, postponed indefinitely. Like, what happened? It
what
says,
did Amy do?
Due to the current situation and financial concerns, what are they, in Ukraine? Where does this take place? And financial concerns of our sponsors, Fenton Days has been postponed indefinitely. What's going on down there, man? We don't know
about. And all the bad publicity from fentanyl.
Wow, yeah, it's just, till that passes, we can't do anything.
Due to the current situation and surrounding fentanyl.
Oh, my God. So that said, let's talk about a murder, shall we?
Okay.
This is some crazy shit. Let me introduce you to 17-year-old Christopher Simmons, first of all.
In 1993?
1993. We're going to pick it up in about around June-ish, and we're going to go from there, 1993. So this is right in our wheelhouse when we were kids, and this is right there.
Yep.
Yeah, this the son's just lost. We're very sad. It's not good.
It's a disappointing time.
Very disappointing. So I think we said that once before too. We were talking about 93, and I'm like, we're very sad right now. So Christopher Simmons is a trailer kid. Hangs out with other trailer kids for the most part. He's kind of half trailer kid, half not trailer kid. That's the thing. He's it's very strange, but he mainly grows up in a trailer situation with a lot of other trailer kids, and he gets into trouble a lot with these other kids. And we knew kids like this. I mean, this is a lot of them. If you go back to episode, I believe it's like 215, Fishkill, New York, and we describe, it's where I went to high school, and we describe the people who, the murderers, I knew a couple of them from high school. So, like, we were just, who these people are. Like, the Gilios and the Serranos from that episode, that's what we're talking about. Just kind of, if something's wrong or missing or somebody's windshield is broken, they're the first, they know who to look for first, you know?
Yeah.
Where's your alibi, Chief?
When there was any rumor at school of something that happened and nobody know who did it, knew who did it? No, Jesus. There was the core group of kids that we all
just
looked
assume.
To that we... It was probably those fucking ragtag group of misfits. They're just weirdos.
Yeah.
And they all lived in trailer parks in the fucking city.
That's
giant
how,
city and trailer
parks. Yeah, in Phoenix and trailer parks tucked into the city, which is... Phoenix trailer situations are very weird. It's a very weird place.
They are precarious indeed.
So, he's got three brothers, Kenny, Billy, and Casey, who are younger than him. His life has always been there's a lot of turmoil. Like you can track why he is where he is at 17 very, very easily and quickly. And we can do that. His father, Dennis, got separated from his mother, Cheryl, not Dennis's mother, Christopher's mother, obviously.
Gotcha.
Anyway, they do that. Dennis, this is before he was even born. They split up. And this is what Dennis said about it. Quote, "The trouble in our relationship came when I went on strike and I went to Montana so I could work and earn money to continue to support my family. I sent money back to Cheryl. I was gone 3 or 4 months. When I came back, Cheryl was gone."
Oh.
Yeah, the money I had sent her was gone. The bills were unpaid. I did not know where she was. I hired a private detective around the time Christopher was born, which was shortly after I returned. At that point, I learned Cheryl was living with Bob Hayes, the man to whom she is now married.
Oh, boy.
So she, yeah, he went to Montana to go, like, work in the fields, you know, the oil fields or something, and he came back and she just took off with it, the new baby, and that's it. The place
that
was
hurts.
Gone. Yeah. So Cheryl ends up marrying this guy named Bob Hayes, who will be not a terrific stepfather at all to young Christopher here. Dennis also said, this is Christopher's father, that Cheryl Hayes cleaned out all the bank accounts and filed for divorce. And I guess he said that she became pregnant with Christopher while taking a fertility drug, but he said that he didn't know that she was pregnant when he left.
Okay.
For Montana, and then he came back, and I guess she was about to have a baby or just had a baby, and then she was gone. So he said that, quote, I paid alimony for 6 months. She remarried the day after she received the last alimony check.
Uh-huh.
I guess that was the thing. She,
Now,
Cheryl claimed that Dennis frequently was behind on child support payments by as much as a year, and then used his income tax check refund to make back payments always every year. That was his thing. So he'd
That's
be like a year behind, basically, is her claim. And Dennis's mother, this is funny, they get involved here. I love when the parents get, like, they know what happened in a relationship.
Yeah.
Dennis's mother says that Cheryl believed that Dennis was cheating on her. And Cheryl, quote, told the pastor that Dennis was cheating on her. And that's
told
why she left.
Told the pastor. Oh, shit.
She told the pastor. That means it's true, damn it. So anyway, that's how that ended up happening. And visitation, there was an issue always between the parents and visitation. They were constantly fighting. They each claimed that the other handled the visits wrong, and they would, you know, complain to young Christopher about it, which that's the worst.
That's ugly. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris's aunt. This is fucking Cheryl's sister, so who knows? Yeah. So they would say that this aunt, Cheryl's sister, says that he would not even pick the kid up. He would send his parents to pick Christopher up. And then Christopher said that they would blame her for it, or not Christopher, Dennis would blame her for it, because it was just people fighting. And it was, and then they would tell the kid, like, you know, if Dennis didn't come pick him up, because whatever, there was some sort of confusion, they would tell the kid that, you know, he must not want to see you. That's why he's not picking you up.
Jesus Christ.
Shit like that. And then the father would say just as bad as shit.
Of
he would
course.
Complain about child support to the kid. So there was just, it's not great. It's not great. Chris, when he did visit his father, there was a lot of tension there, obviously. He said that he would criticize his mom a lot. And that was, you know, kind of a little bit. You know, that took a lot out of him.
Sure.
And then also the difference between Chris's parents, basically his dad had like a nice house and a nice cars and nice things, and his mom didn't.
She struggled.
Bob Hayes is an alcoholic and doesn't seem like a real terrific guy. So, that's how it kind of works. Dennis says, the father says, I've always expressed interest in Christopher's coming to live with me because of the conditions in the house.
It's that bad.
The conditions in the house says a lot here. That's a lot. It was a trashy environment, this house, based on everything that I've seen here. They even say, like, some of the reason is financial, but most of it is just
the treatment.
It's just trash. They're just trash. Even if they have the money, that doesn't matter. It's not a matter of money. You can take the, you know, people out of the trash, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can't take the trash out of the people.
Man, sometimes trash is, it runs through the blood.
It does.
Too deep.
That's what I'm saying. You can't stop that shit. Money can't buy, you can't buy non-trashiness just for money. So as a teenager, Chris would, I guess, give them money sometimes if he worked to provide some financial assistance to his parents. But at the same time, he's also got other shit to spend money on, as we'll talk about here. Dennis talks about, the father says he recalls buying clothing for Chris to wear when he would visit. Yeah. He said, quote, when we went to get him, he did not have any clean clothing. His things would just be thrown into a bag, dirty or wrinkled or not presentable in some other way. We did not want to take him places in rags.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He just sent him off with his father with the bun, you know, shit crammed into a bag here.
It feels like you're picking up an orphan. It's actually your kid.
That's why, yeah, like you're like, oh, I'm going to help this nice homeless child, this family. Yeah. I'll take them mentally, get on their feet or something. It's like, no, that's your kid and you pay child support. That's weird. But like we said, this is two parents who don't like each other,
right?
Trading shots back and forth too. But yeah, everybody seems to.
It's certainly the money that he's paying child support for, and whether or not he's paying it all in lump sums each year, whatever he's paying is not going to this child.
Yeah, and everybody seems to have the same. There's no debate that there was a trashy environment going on at mom's house, and it wasn't clean, and nobody really. There was a lack of supervision and shit like that. So they said that they would like keep clothes at the house because they would send him back with nice clothes, right, and then he'd come back
trashed, yeah,
with shit again. So they would right. keep nice clothes at their house, and then send him back in his. Yep. Like shit clothes. Yeah. So
put back on your Jesus smock.
Yeah, exactly. Here, take this. Yeah, put wrap yourself in linens. There you go. With your rope belt. Enjoy.
Yeah.
So his stepmother, Chris's stepmother, Beth here, Dennis's second wife, said, quote, "When we picked Christopher up for the weekends, he often looked like a ragamuffin. He was not clean. Slowly, we came to understand that we would not be able to do anything after we picked Christopher up, but come home and give him a bath."
Yeah.
So you had to go home and, like, clean him off before you couldn't, like, pick him up and then take him to a fucking to a party or anything. So
we can't go to a pizza place and play video games and such because this kid needs a bath first.
Absolutely. That's the thing. So they would continue to fight. Basically, Dennis and Cheryl would fight over child support. He would claim that that the mother would deny him visits. One time he said that from March until September, he didn't get any visits, but they went back and forth. She said, well, he's not paying child support. It's a lot here. A psychologist later on will say about the whole situation after interviewing everybody, quote, Cheryl Hayes, that's his mom, quote, was a passive and dependent woman. Her first husband, Dennis Simmons, was involved in numerous extramarital affairs throughout their 5 years of marriage. He was also a compulsive gambler, incurring significant debt. See what I mean? There's always two sides. This is the nonpartisan side here. Ms. Hayes attempted to deny these problems and became pregnant in a desperate attempt to hold on to her husband.
Sure.
So, yeah, he was drifting away because he's a dirtbag at the time, and then she wanted to hold on to him, and in the 60s or whatever. Or no, this is the 70s. In the 70s, even, and you still did that. So anyway, their relationship kind of deteriorated, and Cheryl hooked up with Bob Hayes prior to the divorce. And the psychologist said she was frightened of being alone and wanted to be taken care of. Now, Bob, hardcore alcoholic. So she knew that going in, by the way. Still was like, well, it's, he's here. So that's that. I guess she also began drinking with him as well, because why not? If you're with somebody who's drunk, you can either live your life in constant fucking, annoyance, or you can join the party. Not quote party. I'm not saying it's a party to be a fall down alcoholic. So it was, and Bob would knock Chris around a lot. That's the main problem here. Yeah, he'd knock him around. There's a neighbor. He'd drag him around by the ear and shit like
what
that. Yeah, like outside in front of people, he'd do shit like that. Generally being like the stereotypical drunken asshole stepfather is what he is. That's all there is.
You're not my dad. You can't touch me like that.
You can't be beating my ass if you're not my father. That's crazy shit. Not real fond of him doing it either, but who the fuck are you? This is crazy. So a woman named Teresa Vining grew up a few houses down from Christopher Simmons. Mm-hmm. She said that Bob Hayes, the stepfather, she witnessed his abuse on several occasions. She said that when Christopher was as young as 4 to 6 years old, he would be, knocking him around. She said one day he was outside at a neighbor's house playing, and she heard yelling coming from Bob Hayes. And she said, and I heard what sounded like a smack, a real loud smack. And then I heard Christopher screaming right after that directly. I heard Christopher running out of the house and the screen door slamming. We all looked over and I saw him running down the street, and Bob Hayes was screaming for him to come back. She said, it was a painful scream, she said. And he looked scared as a child. Yeah. So, got hit by an adult. So this was other neighbors said that, too. Another neighbor said, I've often heard Bob screaming at Chris. The volume of his voice is so loud that I hear him yelling from my residence, which is approximately three houses away.
Holy hell.
That's a lot of yelling. That's yelling. That's a lot. Another neighbor, this is Teresa's sister, said that she remembers Chris looking frightened when Bob would lose his temper and was very afraid of his stepfather. One time, the brother said, quote, "I seen Bob get out of his chair one time and try to kick Chris." So this is, he does this in front of neighbors. So yeah. What he's behind closed doors, that sounds horrifying. Yeah. Now, Chris also gets into alcohol very early as well. He gets into, starts drinking real early. His grandmother said, quote, this is his dad's mother, said, quote, "Christopher used to tell us that Bob gave him beer all the time, even when he was very small. Once he also told me he used to drink from Bob's beer can."
Ew.
So he'd just get tanked like as a small child. Chris's aunt also, this is Cheryl's sister actually too. So she says that she confirms this exposure to alcohol. She says, quote, "On their wedding night, Cheryl and Bob, they gave Chris alcohol trying to get him drunk."
Trying.
"He was sleepy and could not walk. He was only about 2 years old."
What?
"They got a two-year-old shit face so he'd go to sleep so they could fuck."
That's crazy.
That is, that's insane. How, I've never even thought of that as an option. Have you?
No.
Never mind because, a story and like a, you know,
yeah, no.
have like a, some bourbon and a story. It's bourbon story time, kids. Come on over here. Sit on daddy's lap. What the fuck kind of.
It's bourbon and Thomas the Train time.
Hey, kid, you ever had a Manhattan? Like just trying to. This is ridiculous.
Grab the highball glasses, boy.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
No, and thankfully, I guess, I don't know, how much sex, aren't you having enough sex as an adult that you can wait until the kid falls asleep?
It's our wedding night.
Yeah.
My wedding night, yeah. I'm fucking my wife, even if I have to get a six-year-old so drunk.
A two-year-old.
A two-year-old so drunk that he blacks out. I'm going to do it. Understand? It's not like he's driving. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
Kid, we got to consummate this motherfucker.
I'm telling you. I think that's what it was. It's fine here. I'm fucking my wife on my wedding night.
Unbelievable.
No little goddamn urchin bastard going to stop me. So this woman, Cheryl's sister, also said, quote, "Bob actually bragged about Christopher's drinking. He had a whole quart of whiskey. Maybe that impressed Bob." A quart of whiskey? You can't give a child a quart of whiskey.
The two-year-old drank a quart?
I don't know if that's about that time or another time. Oh, and later he bragged about. So this is another time when Chris was a child, not
a
teenager.
Yeah.
A child drank a quart of whiskey.
Jesus fuck, man.
So that's not good. I don't think that's good for brain development, probably.
Right. And also, with an adult that drinks like Bob seems to drink, he's probably not drinking quality whiskey. That probably was poison for that child.
Oh, it was gut rot. It was gut rot shit. Yeah, it was bad.
Any whiskey is generally poison for a child, but if it's worse, if it's bottom shelf shit,
he's not drinking. He's not drinking Macallan 18 or anything. It's a, you know, come over and have some single malt, son. This is garbage.
Anything. It might be called mix.
Yeah, this bottle's made of plastic.
Right.
This is bad.
This doesn't break.
No, this is bad. You can't even cut someone with a broken one of these. This isn't good. So when he becomes about 13, 14, that's when he's really roaming the neighborhood, hanging out with his idiot jerk-off friends, and they're drinking out there. Sure. Now he just takes it on the road. He's got a friend named Charlie Benjamin, who he hangs out with all the time, who's about a year and a half younger than him. In 93, when Christopher's 17, Charlie is like 15 and a half, almost 16. So,
right.
I don't know, a year and a half different. One of the neighbors says that him and his friends would be out drinking when he's 13, 14 years old, 2 to 3 nights a week. They'd be roaming the neighborhood drinking 2 or 3 nights a week. One woman testified later on that a group of teenagers had hung out together. They were drinking, they were often noisy, and their parents never checked on them. They just were wandering the streets doing whatever they want. They were like the Stranger Things kids.
Right.
Just out there. Where are the kids? I don't know. All right, whatever.
Probably in the Upside Down by now.
Who knows? They've been gone for like 4 days. I don't know where the fuck they are. Shit. When do you look for them? I don't know.
when Christmas lights are spelling out words on the wall.
If anyone finds their bike like ominously off to the side of the road with like a blood trail, we'll take a look around.
We'll go look. Yeah.
We'll look around. Spinning slowly, you know, just real slow, like that. Only like that, though. If it's still, we don't need to look for them. If the tire's not spinning.
If it's still, he put it there.
Oh, man. They would walk around passing around bottles of liquor and all sorts of shit like that. So that's Christopher's early, you know, middle school years here.
Holy fuck, man.
That neighbor's sister, so one of the other neighbors, said that Christopher would be drinking, quote, Jack Daniels and Southern Comfort when she hung out with him on the weekends. 13.
I hope not mixed.
God, no. Jesus. JD and SoCo is not what 13-year-olds should be drinking.
That's a bad drink. That sure is.
Back then, you'd think he'd be trying to acquire some Zima. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe get a hold of that. Some
Bartles and James of some sort.
Some even like the Mad Dog. You get like the strawberry one, and it's not, you could get the grape or something. She said that she observed him doing this a number of times. And I guess eventually Bob Hayes, the stepfather, figured out that Chris was drinking all the time after many, many outings and, quote, made Chris dump all the liquor from the bar at their house so he couldn't steal it. But then Bob restocked it because he's an alcoholic and he wants to drink it, too. Or he's I don't know if he's an alcoholic, but a drinker. And also, the neighbor said that he would basically smoke weed every day on the way to school. And then he'd be like drinking every night. So. He's just,
you have
to
say that, smoke weed every day. I think that's how you
I think every day, you have to do it like that. But I mean, I smoke weed in the mornings before school, too. But
when do you do that?
In high school.
No, when?
Every day. So, I mean,
Rest in peace, Nate.
I did it as well. But I didn't go then drink Southern Comfort afterwards. Right. That's the difference, I think, here. So
there's a difference, too, between, like, drinking. At that age, drinking to, like, enjoy yourself and or be a rebel, even, and, like, drinking to punish yourself. You can't drink two types of liquor and claim that it's, like, for fun.
No.
Especially those ones.
You like to get drunk multiple times a week. You're getting to be an alcoholic is what that is. She said he'd get so drunk that sometimes that he'd be stumbling, his speech would be slurred, and, you know, he would be a fucking disaster, hammered. Yeah, not just like a little drunk. She said they would skip school, you know, one or two days a week to drink as well. One kid said that, quote, we skipped for a week straight and just partied at my house.
How do you get away with that?
They started using coke, acid, and mushrooms as well. So we know these kids, man. I'm just like I know this kid. I see what he's wearing.
Yeah.
I know what kind of shoes he has on. Like I fucking see this kid.
They're dirty.
From that time. Oh, they're filthy, yeah. One kid said, quote, we tripped acid a couple times and we climbed the towers when we were tripping acid too. Or quote, when we was tripping acid too. When we was tripping acid too. Christopher was drunk a lot, basically. Yeah. By 15 he would drink a lot. I mean, a 12-pack was like a normal sit down
that's
and we're gonna drink some beer tonight type of thing here. Hey, everybody, just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, SimplySafe.com, SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here, so you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house, that's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. Simply Safe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home is what it is if you have Simply Safe because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. And Newsweek awarded Simply Safe the best customer service in home security. Simply Safe. safe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/small. That's Simply Safe, simplisafe.com/small. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Now back to the show.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And he started hanging out with this other guy named Brian Moomy, who is like 30 years old and lives in a trailer. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy. And they would also, they'd get fucked up and they would, quote, find a high tower and just climb it and sit up there and get real hammered and drunk and stoned. And he said, we'd get drunk and we'd just do crazy stuff. This is one of his friends here. One of his friends said that they consumed approximately 12 beers and then, you know, smoke a bunch of weed. They'd climb this tower and... Yeah. Sit up there, you know, like dazed and confused.
Right.
Yeah, that's what's going on. So, I don't know. Another psychologist, the same guy that was talking before, he said that, quote, by the age of 17, Mr. Simmons, that's Christopher, was using marijuana on a daily basis, 4 to 5 joints per day, and consuming alcohol 4 to 5 days a week, a minimum of 12 beers per occasion.
Holy shit.
That's a hardcore, that's like a construction worker with a bad back. And you know what I mean? Like, that's
I drink alcohol heavy. And I don't drink that much.
Oh, God, Jesus, that's a problem. You'd feel terrible every day. Your shit would never be together. It would your stomach would always be in a state of rebellion.
Yeah.
It'd be horrible. So they said in school, too, he wasn't doing well. A lot of comments about him. He wouldn't sit still. He's moving around the classroom. He's disruptive in class all the time. He's also drunk. Yeah, I was going to say, when you're shit-faced at school. And, Charlie Benjamin's his friend. They hang out at this guy Brian Moomy's house. Now, Brian Moomy, like I said, is about 30 years old, lives in a real shitty trailer. He spent time in prison for assault with a weapon, burglary, stealing. He's just a scumbag who lives in the trailer park.
And that's also impressive to a shitbag and shitbird that's this fucked up. Like that, I aspire to be you. You've been to prison? Oh, you badass.
And he allows them to come and drink in the house. Yeah. They're allowed to drink and smoke weed in the trailer. Oh, we all know that place. Yeah. You know what I mean? The guy wants to be friends with the kids. He'll go buy them beer and shit like that. And
my sister married that guy.
It's Brian Moomy. That's the guy, huh? That's him. And they said Christopher like looked up to him like crazy. He was very susceptible to his influence. And, they described him as, quote, Brian Moomy, who lived in a nearby trailer park and was an extremely negative influence on the local teenagers.
Yeah.
That describes it. You know who we're talking about,
absolutely.
Don't you, everybody? Everybody sees that guy. He called them. This is like our little group here. He called them the Thundercats.
No, they've got their own group nickname.
They're the Thundercats, man. And Brian was cool to have this little teenage posse in the house here.
Lion-o.
Yeah, because there's a couple other kids that come in and out of here too, but Charlie and Christopher are the main deal here. Thundercats, Jimmy.
Wild.
Thundercats, oh, indeed. he would allow them to hang out at the trailer. He would also, the quote word around the trailer park was that Moomy would have the kids go out and steal and commit illegal acts for him. Also, another youth from the neighborhood described the trailer as the local party house for teenagers.
Oh, boy.
This creepy fuck tries to bang teenage girls. You can just tell.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, obviously. But
the character that I can see in my head certainly would do that.
Yeah, they would go. He said the guy also said that they would, steal shit. This one kid said, quote, Brian Moomy would buy beer for Chris and Charlie, as well as the other kids. And in return, all of the young people would go out and steal for Moomy and act under his direction to do various illegal acts. So, This is a quote from somebody. Although Christopher's stepfather was aware and had personally observed Mr. Mumy purchasing alcohol for teenagers, he states he did not intervene when Chris was going to his house because he had never observed him giving alcohol to Christopher. And Mumy would also give them weed and acid and sell them shit.
He's the rat king.
Exactly. He's the local dirtbag fucking... Yeah.
Scumlord.
But like he knows just enough because he's lived 12 more years to say shit that makes them think that he knows things about the world that they should like listen to. Right. Meanwhile, his knowledge of the world has landed him in a dilapidated trailer with nobody else that wants to hang out with him but teenagers.
Post a prison stay.
But after his prison stint, nobody wanted to be there. Another neighbor said, quote, that Charlie Benjamin told her, quote, Mumy held things over the kids' heads and threatened to tell their parents what they were doing if the young people did not do his bidding. And then, he would also give them drugs and buy them booze. And
what a piece of shit. Just manipulating children.
Yep, that's what he does. One guy said here that he personally heard Brian discussing robberies and burglaries with some of the kids that frequented the trailer. A local convenience store owner, Kathy Granith, said that she also heard that all the kids talking about hanging out at Mumy's trailer and all this type of shit there. So, and I guess Mumy would buy a bunch of beer that she figured was obviously for the kids. Right. So that's how it would work. Charlie Benjamin's father says that he doesn't think that Mumy ever specifically told the kids to steal shit, but he feels like if they did steal shit, Mumy could fence the shit for him. He was the fence for stuff. So if you went and stole a car stereo, you could bring it to him and he'll get you $20 for it.
Yeah, he won't stop you.
No, he's the local scumbag. But other neighbors say that other people have told them that he was encouraging kids to do this on his behalf. So they'd all make a little bit of money after that. The convenience store owner, the Kathy Granith? How the fuck do you say that?
Granith.
Yeah. She said that her store was robbed shortly, like in September of 1993, and she believes that Brian Mumy set up the burglary of the store because a local teenager told her that Charlie Benjamin and Brian Mumy are the ones that burglarized the store. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the to set the tone. Yeah. Another kid from the neighborhood said that Brian Mumy gave kids tattoos with a homemade tattoo gun.
Oh, Brian, put it the fuck away. Stop it.
In a trailer, giving kids tattoos.
This is not okay. These children, you fucking nightmare.
My God. I guess Charlie had gotten a tattoo when he was drunk over there one time. And he told this friend that Brian had given him alcohol so he wouldn't feel the pain. But he'll bleed a shitload more.
Because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, my God. This is fucking crazy. Charlie Benjamin's father said that Mumy definitely had an influence over these young, impressionable individuals. And he acknowledged they liked him because he bought them beer and let them drink in his trailer in the mobile home park. I like how he said it. I just like how he said it. So, anyway, some robbery stuff. One of the neighbors said that Mumy was talking about where to rob. You know, he wanted to rob some stuff. One time he said that this neighbor alleges that Mumy, quote, requested that they go from trailer to rob places because he was behind on his trailer pad rent.
Wow.
So he's behind on his lot fee. Yeah. On his lot fee. And I guess reported that after Brian had moved into the trailer park, quote, things got serious. A lot of kids in the neighborhood began drinking, doing drugs and robbing trailers. Go rob better neighborhoods, stupid.
Yeah, he's going to rob trailer park itself.
Also, if you're to not get caught, wouldn't you, like, you're in the neighborhood. If the cops are looking for people, they're going to talk to you first, the kid who lives three houses down. Yeah. It's just fucking stupid. So other neighbors said that Mumy would try to impress kids with his shtick of being an ex-con tough guy. Mm-hmm. He's Satanic Bill, basically, if you've heard before in the past, but worse. He's actually worse than Satanic Bill.
Yeah, because he's tattooing people, James. He's making permanent marks on these kids.
Yeah, that's another thing. Tattoos. Fuck, man.
That's unbelievable.
So Bob Hayes said that he heard that, quote, one of Mumy's former girlfriends told someone that Mumy directed the kids to, when they're robbing a place, to kill whoever recognized them if they were ever ID'd or caught in the act of stealing from a home or business.
What?
Cover your path, man. Cover your tracks here. Another person said, called Mumy the neighborhood drug supplier, and that he allowed young people to drink and smoke pot at his trailer, where there were anywhere from 6 to 15 kids there at a time. Holy fucking shit. So anyway, apparently at one point, Christopher Simmons had, Teresa Yates, who is a classmate of Christopher Simmons, a young person, a teenager, was hiding from juvenile authorities in June of 1994 and had been and stayed at Brian Mumy's trailer. So he's hiding fugitive youths now. This is perfect.
Harboring.
So anyway, 1993, we're talking about Christopher Simmons setting the table. We know who he is now.
Yeah.
And he's hanging out with this other asshole.
Very impressionable.
Moron.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. And a kid that really needs, I don't even know what's going to fix him at this point. He's pretty fucked.
He's pretty damaged. Yeah.
You know these kids. It's not good. So they end up killing a family and burning a house down if you listen to that Fishkill episode. That's
exactly
who that is. Yeah. That's what happens a lot of times. So this Charlie Benjamin and John Tesmer, who's 16, they talk about this one night in September about committing a burglary. Mm-hmm. They want to commit a burglary, maybe even kill somebody. Who knows?
Who knows?
We'll see how it goes.
We're up for anything.
Simmons was telling them, look, no matter what we do, we're juveniles, so we'll be able to get away with it. So it's all good.
Well, that's not how that works.
17, 15, 16, we're going to work this out. So September 8th, 1993, he's got a target. Okay, Brian has a target. He believed that a quote, this is right from court documents, Jimmy, a quote, voodoo man.
Hell yeah.
A voodoo man.
Mm-hmm. In Missouri.
A voodoo man. Yeah, there's a voodoo man and we're going to go rob him. First of all, if you're going to rob people and you think there's a voodoo man involved, he's not the guy to rob probably, right?
I'm staying the fuck out of that man's house.
No, they're going to rob the voodoo man who lived in a nearby trailer park that he decides that's the guy to rob. Because rumor had it that he used to own hotels and motels and has lots and lots of money, even though he lives in a rundown, shitty trailer park. This is how dumb kids are. He's got millions of dollars, but he just lives like a hermit weirdo. Meanwhile, he's probably just an old man on Social Security or something.
Right. So, you don't know that his hotels didn't fucking go bankrupt. I've heard of that happening a lot.
Maybe they all had bed bugs and he fucking went under. We don't know. So they talk all about that. So September 9th, 1993, that's September 8th. September 9th, about 2 a.m., the boys meet up, okay? So this is the morning of the 9th. Christopher Simmons, Benjamin, and Tesmer, they all meet up around 2 a.m. So they're going to carry out the plan. They're going to do this. They meet where? Of course, Brian Mumy's trailer.
Okay.
Yeah. Shocking. His house is the cemetery of this episode. Yeah. If they didn't have his house, they'd have to do all this shit at a cemetery. That's the problem.
Right.
So they meet over there and they decide they're going to go do this. Now, Tesmer decides, I'm out. It's the middle of the night. I don't want to go fucking rob anybody. I'm out of here. So he takes off. So allegedly, it is just Simmons and Benjamin at this point. So
at that point in the plan, and one of your Ocean's 11, one of your Ocean's 3 dips, don't you just say, well, we can't do this now because he's already not a part of this and he knows too much.
It's not like that's the thing. He knows too much. I was going to say, it's not like they need him to carry out a plan. It's not like one of them, gets the alarm and the other guy's like a second story man and the other one's a driver. Like they have all, there's no roles. This is just three jerk offs.
He's not the one putting a prosthetic on and seducing the woman that's watching the safe.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I feel like this is like, this kid wants to feel like he's a tough kid who's going to go meet his friends at 2 in the morning and then rob somebody. When he comes down to it, he's like, I'm going to go home. Like,
As soon as you say 2 a.m., break into a man's voodoo man's house.
Voodoo man.
Where's he? Probably asleep. We're going to surprise a voodoo man. I'm
the
going
voodoo
home.
Man. Yeah. And then what happens? Yeah.
Right.
So they left. They go to an adjacent trailer park to go carry this out. And they find a back window cracked open in this trailer, okay? They open the window, they reach through, and unlock the back door. That's how they get in. They enter through the house, they walk through the house. Christopher Simmons turns on a hallway light for some reason. Again, sophisticated. Turn on the hall light. That won't draw any attention to whoever might, that won't get the voodoo man up and at him.
Jesus, I am terrified of the voodoo man. I don't want any part of him. If I'm a teenager in the 90s, I want no part of the voodoo man. That sounds scary as shit. That sounds like a horror movie character. Like, oh, did you see that shit? Yo, that voodoo man, that's crazy. They're going to make a part two. The voodoo man, part two.
Do they think the light scares off the voodoo man? Is that what they think?
I think maybe. Well, that's what teenagers think, though. If anything's scary, you turn a light on when you're a kid. That's how immature I think that's going on. I'm scared. Stupid. Turn the light on. So instead, they awaken the resident who is not a voodoo man.
Who is
and it? Is not a man at all.
Oh, no.
This is a woman named Shirley Ann Crook, and she's 46 years old. She's a truck driver. Uh-huh. She's a truck driving mama, and she, her husband is named Steve Cook. He's Steve Crook Sr. He's also a truck driver. So
you don't fuck with these people.
A couple of truck driving people. She awakens from the hall light being turned on.
Yeah, because the house is illuminated.
What the fuck is happening? Yeah, it's at the end of the hall. So she turned on her bedroom light, lit up like a Christmas tree. Her bedroom, whole bedroom lit up. Yeah. So her husband is an over-the-road trucker, and he's away tonight. She's there alone. She sits up in bed and asks, who's there? And Simmons rushes in the bedroom, and that's when they have a moment of recognition. You have to understand, this is a random thing where they think maybe the voodoo man is here.
Right.
They have a moment of recognition here. This is the fucking one of the weirdest coincidences in crime history here. Uh-huh. They had been in a car accident with each other.
Oh, dear God.
So immediately he goes, oh, shit, that's the lady I got an accident with in my head and her head and his head. And then she has a moment of recognition and goes, I know you.
Right.
So she not only knows him, she has his insurance information.
Right.
Like, this isn't like, I think I saw this kid one time. It might have been him that robbed my house.
She knows your address, dog.
Here's a copy of his driver's license.
Right.
Like, I have it all right here. Yeah, we'll go knock on his door. So he then orders her out of the bed and onto the floor. Uh-huh. And Benjamin, Charlie Benjamin, helps him out. Benjamin basically, at this point, Christopher tells her to stay down, and Charlie Benjamin guards her while Christopher goes and rummages in the house here, finding a roll of duct tape and dog leashes.
Oh, no.
Okay? So he's got a couple of dog leashes because there's a poodle involved here. That's every story we have where there's a poodle, it never helps.
Never.
So it never helps. So,
it's
please,
a useless fucking animal.
It's not going to help you. If you're going to get a dog, get one that'll help the situation.
Get something
so,
that barks.
At least some sort of threatening bark. That thing might bite me. Not, eh. So anyway, finds a roll of duct tape, returns to the bedroom, has a leash, has duct tape, and then takes her clothes off of her and has those to help bind as well. She's naked at that point. There's no sexual assault that takes place here. I'll tell you that right off the bat. She struggles to free herself, so he uses her own clothing and dog leashes and all of this shit to tie her hand. They hog tie her.
What were they gonna do with the fucking voodoo man?
That's what I mean. Suppose this was a man, not only a grown man, but a grown man with probably magical powers. What were you going to do then? At what point were you going to go,
you just
who doesn't have any pets? Then
right.
What?
Planned on
and
him having a dog with several leashes?
Several leashes and duct tape. They then, and this is horrible, man, they put duct tape, they cover her face in duct tape.
Oh, God.
Her over her eyes, over her face. She, you know, having trouble breathing even. They leave a little bit of space, but not much here. Over this, too, they're beating her also.
Oh,
there's
my God.
Bruises, as we'll find out. They're punching her to try to keep her still and all this type of shit. So they tape her eyes and mouth shut, like I said. They then take her and walk her from her home.
Oh, my God.
Okay, they stand her up. She's not hogtied at this point. They stand her up and take her outside and put her in the back of her own minivan, a 1988 Ford Aerostar.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Simmons drives from her home to Castlewood State Park in St. Louis County. All right. Yeah. Now, I think they're in St. Louis County, too, but still. At the park, he drives the van onto the railroad trestle that spans the Merrimack River. It's a it's a railroad bridge.
Yeah.
So they drive the car up there, park the van up there. He and Benjamin start to take her out of the back of the truck and realize that she's freed her hands and removed some of the duct tape from her face, and she's ready to fucking take off.
So using her purse strap and the belt from her bathrobe and a towel from the back of the minivan and some electrical wire found on the trestle just off to the side, just some wire sitting there, they bind her hands and feet up and hogtie her, and then they cover her head with a towel. All right? That's what they do, and tie it on there. They walk her to the railroad trestle. It's at this point that they hogtie her. I'm sorry. I knew there was a hogtie at some point. At this point, they hogtie her with the electrical cable and cover her face completely with duct tape over the towel. Okay? Then Christopher Simmons throws her off the trestle into the river.
Stop that.
100% alive, kicking fine, not unconscious, just scared
hogtied
shitless.
In the water.
Threw her into the fucking river, heard her plop, hit the water, and that's that. She went down and drowned.
Oh, my God.
How fucking horrible is that?
What kind of monster? For what?
But you want to know what they got out of this whole thing?
I would love to know.
Because, hold on, they then drove her, they threw her purse in the woods and drove the van back to the trailer park across the street from her trailer park.
Right.
Thought they got away with it. Got a total of $6.
Get the fuck out of here.
$6 they did this for.
That is so much work for $6.
$6 for this. It's so one of the most horrible, harrowing, horrifying ways to die I've ever heard of for $6. That's fucking disgusting. Later that day, he went to Moomy's trailer and bragged to Moomy that he, quote, killed a woman because the bitch seen my face. That's what he said. Yeah, it's just fucking trash kid here. At the meantime, her husband returns from an overnight trip and discovers that his wife, there's messages his wife hadn't gotten to work. She's supposed to go trucking that day. And so that evening, he files a missing persons report. They're employed by the same trucking company, so he knew her schedule. And he went to the house. He found some damage inside. He said the poodle was whimpering and found the poodle wrapped in duct tape on the master bedroom floor.
They taped the dog?
They taped the dog's legs so it couldn't run. So it was
what
just tape.
What the fuck?
They taped the dog up, tied it up so it didn't run around and it just was whimpering on the floor.
It was clearly not fighting you. You didn't even have to do that.
No.
But, I mean,
if you can duct tape it, it's not a vicious dog.
Yeah.
Try duct taping one of my dogs and see what happens.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to fucking happen. Good luck. They will murder you quickly. So the next day, four fishermen find her body floating in the river 3/4 of a mile down from where they dumped her off. Holy shit. They use her fingerprints to figure out who she is. It's fucking horrible, man. Yeah. Her face, the only area on her face that was visible was her nose because there was duct tape everywhere else. The medical examiner found 29 bruises on her body and 4 fractured ribs.
They beat her unmercifully.
Unmercifully. And the cause of death was drowning. So, holy shit.
God.
He went to school the next day. Christopher told somebody.
What?
Oh, yeah. The next day, they both went to school. They got up and went to school the next day somehow. They got home probably 4 o'clock in the morning. Still went to school.
I mean, I guess the opposite is like they didn't go to school the next day. Obviously, they didn't go to school the next day. But
oh, no.
They went to school the next day.
And bragged about it.
Wow.
He told a kid, quote, guess what we did last night? We beat up an old lady and we took her up to the trestle and we pushed her off. And guess what she did? She went bubble, bubble, bubble. That's what he told somebody. Anyway, somebody obviously rats on him because kids aren't going to fucking do this. That's going to get around school quickly. So by the end of the day, they pull a team of detectives, pull him out of fucking school. Real ones, not like those fake ones from a few episodes ago. Actual squad cars with fucking, you know, not some fake guy going, we have to talk to this young man. Within 2 hours, he is waiving his Miranda rights and not only giving a full confession, but performing a videotaped reenactment of the entire thing as well. Absolutely, both the kids do. But they both completely break and spill it. They tell him, hey, this is a death penalty case.
Yeah,
you know, what's going to happen? And this is the policeman said, this is Chris, quote, I had her tied up. She walked out on the bridge and I tied her hands and feet together and pushed her off. They said, who pushed her? And he said, I did. And they said, who? And he said, I did. The guy said, you pushed her? And he said, I did. And they said, okay, Chris. Holy shit.
All right, Chris. I just want to make sure that you're telling us you're a fucking cold-blooded murderer.
And then he reenacted it for him. Yeah. They said he didn't appear to have any remorse. He started crying after he confessed. And so he goes to jail. Once he's in jail, he basically has a hard time in jail. Can't adjust to incarceration, they're saying. He's immature and impulsive behavior. He, at one point, attempts suicide. Uh-huh. He uses broken pieces of his inhaler to try to cut himself.
Wow.
Yeah, he breaks the plastic and does that. Now, there's a huge rumor that Mumy was involved, that it was not just the two kids, that it was the three of them. Uh-huh. And that's the big rumor, but neither kid says that. Both kids just say it was those two. Uh-huh. And I believe that, honestly. Yeah. I think Mumy is the type where he's going to send them to do it. He's not going to fucking do it himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the Charles Manson. He's not going to he's going, you go to that house and show those pigs a lesson. Right. He's not going to do it. I'll be here waiting for you when you get back and tell me what happened. That's my opinion.
And if a kid tells you, I pushed a woman off a bridge and tells you that it's just him and his friend, if he's willing to tell you he pushed a woman off the bridge, but he's going, why would he hide Toomey being there? Or Mooney? What was his name?
Mumy. Mumy. Mooney.
That's a Mumy. Bad name.
That's a terrible Mumy. You change Mumy.
That's so, the name of a guy in a trailer park.
Fuck yeah. They said that people were scared of him, that Mumy was stalking people, and that's why the kids didn't spill it, because they were afraid he would kill the family and all this type of shit. Mumy says, this is crazy. I don't understand. He said they just like to come over the trailer, quote, because they could get away from their parents and hang loose. This is fucking Spicoli has grown up and moved to Missouri. This is terrible.
He's a Hawaiian tourist shirt. Hang loose. Fuck
hang
you,
loose,
man.
Brah. It's cool, man. He admitted to being a heavy drinker and who had a little party for kids between the ages of 14 and 19 every night at his house. He said he'd provide beer. Sometimes they'd mow his lawn or clean his house for him.
You're 30.
You're 30,
bro. What
are
you talking about?
Yeah, this is absolutely fucking asinine.
Unbelievable.
He admitted that the youths called the Thundercats, all the kids, and they called him, quote, Thunder Dad. Charles Manson Thunder Dad. Unite.
Thunder Dad.
Thunder Dad. Unfucking believable. Thundercats and Thunder Dad. Oh, my fucking God.
They're devoid of any fucking creativity.
No.
They rip off a show and then don't even have the leader's name. They just throw in Dad.
Just Thunder Dad. Unbelievable.
He's a turd.
Fucking unreal. So for Chris, they're going for the death penalty.
Yeah.
Charlie, they're going for life without.
Okay.
So. Charlie's whole thing goes first. They find him guilty because they admitted it and acted it out on video. You, young man, may fuck off. Life without parole for a kid who was 15 when it happened.
Wow, what a waste.
Now, Chris's trial, this is what the state asked during the voir dire of the jurors here. Quote, is there anybody here that for the sole fact of the defendant's age could not sit in judgment on this case? You're not saying just because of his age you would never consider the death penalty. You would be able to at least consider it. And is your position that because of the defendant's age you could not consider both punishments? I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to consider a person's age. What I'm saying is, would it totally exclude for you any possibility of considering the sentence of death? So they want to get anyone who would be against executing a teenager out of the way.
Right.
So verdict, I mean, it's obvious, the trial. He's guilty. Yeah. Sentencing comes in here. And for sentencing, they try to say that he grew up in this horrible environment. He's a fucking teenager. Give him life without parole. All this type of shit. They're talking about his mom having alcoholism and being hospitalized for it and all this type of shit. They have a psychiatrist saying that he has schizotypal personality disorder and all this other shit, a disorder distinguished by pervasive pattern of social and interpersonal deficits marked by acute discomfort and reduced capacity for close relationships and cognitive and perceptual distortions. Okay. There's that, he says that, they're going through all the thing. They're trying to get him not killed, and he's trying to get him. The state's trying to kill him. That's how it works here. The state, in closing, said, quote, Let's look at the mitigating circumstances. Okay, let's look at that. He listed the mitigating circumstances now. He said, quote, I don't have them here in front of me. Age? Think about age. 17 years old. Isn't that scary? Doesn't that scare you? Mitigating? Quite the contrary, I submit. Quite the contrary. He tried to say his age is an aggravating factor.
What is that?
If he did it by now, like, imagine what he's going to do when he's 35. Think about exponential growth. He'll kill 8-9 people a week by then.
That,
you know what I'm saying?
That's is so dangerous.
Yeah, that's a little bit crazy. He said, look at what his friends and family told you. Isn't that scary? Look at how he repaid their love. Look at what he's done to them. And they're asking you to spare his life so he can remain in prison as a constant reminder to them of the acts he did on that night. Show some mercy to his family. Give him death. He tried to say that's what would be better for his family, even though they begged for the opposite.
Family out of their misery.
Those people don't know what they want. They actually want him dead. They think they want him alive. That's why they came and swore on a Bible and said they wanted him alive. But that's
Holy
not what happened.
Shit. That is like
give him death.
Did Tom Brady give him a pep talk? Like what?
It gets worse.
Hyped up.
Oh, it gets worse. And we're not. What they did was fucking horrible.
Yeah.
But this is to be this enthusiastic about killing a child is a little weird. He says, show some mercy to his family. Give him death. Look at his family. Look at his little brother. Kenny said it all. His brother's sitting right there. Look at his little brother. Kenny said it all. Someday I want to grow up to be just like him. To be just like him. Spare those kids of that.
Let's kill that kid too.
Oh my God. Just in case. Let's nip it right in the bud here. Then the judge says that he says that this that he received letters, quote, reflecting the ongoing debate in our society about the death penalty. He also listed the factors that the law says that are the basis for the death penalty, which are murder or something of value, to prevent arrest, and callous disregard for human life. Those are the aggravating factors. He said that Simmons had broken into the home of a woman who was, quote, a wife, a mother, and a grandmother. He bound her with duct tape, hogtied her, and thrown her to her death in the river. This cannot be tolerated.
Yeah.
You, sir, may fuck off. Death penalty by lethal injection.
Holy.
So, that's what happens there. Then
you got it with that fucking...
That worked. Then he ends up getting super religious in jail.
Yeah.
Like extra Christy. He's like leading prayer things and he's all into it.
He's a Jesus voodoo man. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the Jesus man now. And so he appeals based on the fact that, you know, he wasn't even 18 yet when this happened. Right. At the time in 1989, the Supreme Court had ruled that it was basically to the states. Like some states can execute children while others don't have to. You know, it was like one of those deals. They said that, that it was basically like, we can't just say at an age someone matures automatically, so we have to do it on each individual basis, and maybe we can kill a 9-year-old. Who knows? I mean, that was essentially, if they're mature enough, that's what the ruling said, basically. So they said because Christopher's jury was not made to consider age as a mitigating factor, but instead was specifically told by the state that age was an aggravating factor, that would be interesting. Religious groups start asking for fucking... him to be like some archdiocese of the Catholic Church with in the name of John Paul II asked. I mean, it's all this whole
begging to spare this kid, huh?
They always do it with juveniles who are in like that. Anyway, 2003, the Missouri Supreme Court throws out his sentence based on this, resentences him to life without parole. Yeah. And then 2005, the Supreme Court, because the state tries to get it reinstated, right. It goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court prohibits the death penalty for the juvenile killer in this particular case. Mm-hmm. And he is given life without parole. And now the court has barred the death penalty for all killers throughout the country who are under 18 when they committed their crimes. This is the case that this came from. So
wow.
There you go, everybody. That is Fenton, Missouri, and one scummy murder. Thundercats Ho.
Oh.
Holy shit. Anyway, there you go. That's the story. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com is where you get all the stuff. Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports is where you get your bonus stuff. Listen to Crime and Sports every Tuesday. Small Town Murder every Thursday.
That's right.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Have a good one.
Jen.
See you later, everybody.
I got to take a bath. Bye.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.